been in a while, so I don't know.
We're holding the top of the salad of Aleph. The Mishnah had described, basically, how the Sanhedrin, how the basin interrogates the Aesir, to ask them about the details of how they saw the moon. Among the questions, we said they asked them, the Mishnah said, we asked them, is Kamahoya Gavoya, how high up off the ground was the moon? Which direction was it facing? North or south, or which direction were the points of the crescent facing? So the Mishnah had mentioned, among other things, actually this really the Mishnah had, this goes back actually on the previous part of the Mishnah, that it said that they asked him, Tzoyna or Ledroima, was the moon to the north or the south of the sun? So the says, Tzonechot, the one bright east. Well, the sun, in other words, is setting more or less in the west. Sometimes, I'll explain in a second what Rashi says, but the sun is setting somewhere on the western horizon. In Tishrei time, it'll be more or less exactly due west. Tevis time, it'll be in the north. It'll be north of west. Tammuz time, it'll be south of west. The moon is setting somewhere near the sun. So we're asking, is the moon to the north of the sun or to the south of it? In other words, if the sun is setting in the west, to the north of it then would be to the right of the sun. The sun is here and the moon is here, let's say. And if it's to the south of it, it would be the other way around. The moon is to the left of the sun. So Tanachot, the one Braisa says, let's find a Dvar of Kayamin, that if the aid says that he saw the moon to the north of the sun, then that's correct, we can accept his aid. But if he says he saw it to the south, then what he says is worthless, because it's not to the south. But then we have another Braisa that says the other way around. L'droim o'dvar o'kayomim, if he says that the moon was to the south, then what he's saying is correct. L'tzfein o'loyom o'klom, if he says to the north, then what he said is worthless. So what is it? Is the moon can the moon be to the north or the south of the sun? The Gemara's answer is, can be mo'sachama, can be mo'sachshamim. One is talking about in the summer, one is talking about in the winter. Now what does that mean? Rashi explains, although it's very hard to understand what Rashi means, but Rashi says like this. The sun, the position where the sun sets, like I just said, is variable. Nisan and Tishrei time, it's exactly due west. The Tevis time, is north of west. And Tammuz time, is south of west. The moon, Rashi says, always sets in the southwest. So the new moon, when it's setting, is always in the southwest, Rashi says. Which, that's a tough thing to understand how Rashi can say that, because the position where the moon sets is fairly close to where the sun sets. They're never more than about 5 degrees apart, of latitude. So if the sun is going to set over here, then the moon is also going to set in that general part of the sky, and the same thing over here. Be that as it may, so that's how Rashi says it. The moon always sets in the southwest. The sun sometimes sets in the northwest, sometimes in the southwest, depending on the time of year. So during the summertime, necessarily, since the sun is setting in the north and the moon is setting in the south, necessarily then the moon is south of the sun. And that's the second Braisa, that if he says L'droim o'dvar o'kayamin, that would be talking about in the summertime. Whereas in the wintertime, since the sun is setting over here, and the moon is also in this area, it can be a little bit north of the sun. The sun can end up setting further south than the moon does. The difficulty with understanding what Rashi is saying at face value is that the position of the moon when it sets is variable. Not like Rashi seems to say, that it's always in the southwest. Right, it can be. It's always going to be within 5 degrees, one way or the other, of the sun.
So it can be either on the right of the sun or on the left.
That's what we're saying. But in other words, it's not going to be necessarily always in the southwest. If the sun is setting due west, then the moon is going to be within a couple of degrees of due west. If the sun is setting in the northwest, then the moon is going to be within a couple of degrees of northwest, etc. So there are other explanations. Some of them are farshim. I think the Meiri says that when we say Latsoina or Ladroima, we don't mean whether the moon is relative to where the moon is relative to the sun. We mean where is the moon relative to the exact west point, due west. to not to the pole, there's no west pole, but to the whatever it would be called, yeah, the cardinal point west. So therefore, then it's correct to say that during the summer necessarily the moon is going to be north of that because during most of the summer anyway, it's conceivable a couple of days after the equinox for it to be not, because again the moon has a latitude of its own. But still, basically during the summer the moon will be north of the equator, just like the sun is, and during the winter the sun will be south. The sun and therefore the moon will be south of the equator, and therefore north and south respectively of due west. That's how I think the Iri explains it. Rabbi Hananel has a long explanation that boils down to that it depends not it depends whether the sun itself is traveling northward or southward. It's not really summer versus winter according to Rabbi Hananel. It's rather from Tkufas Tevis until Tkufas Tamuz, where the sun is traveling northward, versus Tkufas Tamuz till Tkufas Tevis, when the sun is traveling southward. Tkufas Tevis, the sun reaches its furthest south point, the Tropic of Capricorn. Then it starts moving north from there. As the sun is moving northward, the moon is trailing behind it a little bit, because the moon sets a little bit later than the sun.
Between Tevis and Tamuz,
when the sun is moving northward, then the moon is kind of trailing along behind the sun a little bit. So therefore, the moon ends up setting in the place where the sun was a couple of days ago, which is further south. So therefore, it can be said from Tevis until Tamuz, the moon is going to be south of the sun, not in the sense that it'll set further south than the point in the sky where the sun sets. And from Tamuz till Tevis, it would be the other way around.
And Rashi says what?
Rashi is saying that the moon always sets in a defined place in the sky, and therefore that can be north or south of the sun, because the sun's position of setting changes throughout the year, but the moon's position, Rashi says, does not. But again, the problem with that is that that's not that that that.
You've
that,
never seen the moon setting north of the sun.
But you can actually. So that's the thing. The thing is like this. The difficulty with Rashi's explanation is, again, the moon has a latitude. Tertius points out over here that also, and the Rambam explains it in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh at great length. The sun has a plane of rotation of its own. It has an orbit of its own. The moon has its own. They're angled to each other about 5 degrees. So the sun, on a given day, for example, the sun may be, let's say, 10 degrees north of the equator. The moon, let's say, will be... It'll have the same longitude as the sun. That's why we see them in a straight line. That's why we see them. That's why the moon's invisible, because the lit side of it is facing the sun. But it is anywhere between 0 and 5 degrees north or south of the sun, which therefore we perceive that as it being to the east or west of the sun as it sets. Not to the east or west, sorry, to the north or south of the sun as it sets. If the amount is 0 degrees, then you have an eclipse. If it's more than about half a degree, you won't have an eclipse, because et cetera. So the moon's rotation, this thing where the moon reaches the same plane as the sun and then moves apart and et cetera. This business where it goes between 0 and 5 degrees has a cycle, but that cycle has nothing to do with the seasons. It has an independent movement of its own, and about 3 degrees every day.
The moon is always on its.
So the moon is always on its regular orbit, but its orbit is inclined to the orbit of the sun about 5 degrees.
Always the same.
No, that's the thing. So they're always angled about 5 degrees apart. But sometimes the moon will be at this point of its orbit, which intersects the orbit of the sun, and then its latitude is 0 degrees, and then you have an eclipse. Sometimes it'll be a degree north or south. Sometimes 2 degrees, etc. It all depends. It's a simple thing. The Rambam gives a simple table to calculate. Once you know the moon's longitude, automatically you can calculate its latitude. You just use plain spherical trigonometry to figure out. Where, once it's moved X amount of degrees of arc along in longitude, then it's moving a comparable amount in latitude. Because it's just a matter of solving a couple of angles, and then I'm going to give the table for it. So that's the problem. It doesn't seem to have to do with they don't have a blackboard here, but let me see if I can draw it out a little bit. Here's the orbit of the sun. There's the orbit of the moon. So they cross each other. I drew it wrong. They only cross each other at 2 points, not four. No, actually, okay, there we have. There's 1 point where they cross. There's another point where they cross.
That's
the point where the sun's and the moon's orbits intersect. So the moon, let's say, is here. The sun, let's say, is here on its orbit.
Right.
So therefore, they have the same. They're at the same point. That's why the moon is invisible to us because we're only seeing the dark side of it. But the east and as far as being north and south of each other. In this case, the sun is a few degrees south of the moon, or which is another way of saying it. The moon is a few degrees north of the sun. And you could have the other way. You could have any possible case. You could have these two circles could be anywhere. These two circles representing the sun and the moon. Which actually maybe I shouldn't have drawn that, as we'll see on Ahmed Bey's, but anyway, it's Islamid, but it's Islamid, it's the learn, so we'll talk about that more on Ahmed Bey's. But these two circles that I drew here to represent the sun and the moon can be at any two points along these two circles representing their orbits.
But my question to you was, are these circles both moving on their own axis?
One represents the sun moving around the Earth, which has its axis.
The orbit of the sun is flat and it stays like this.
Yeah.
And the orbit of the moon is angled.
Basically. Yeah.
Okay. They're not rotating.
No. Okay. They're not rotating relative to each other, but you still have, one day the sun is over here, and therefore it makes a complete 24-hour rotation at that latitude, at that latitude, another day at another latitude, etc. Yeah.
We're saying that the ocean motion, so it's a matter that we can't say that the revolving against.
That's another issue. That's another issue that Ebba has talked about. But we're not even getting into that now. Whether we say the sun rotates or whether we say the Earth rotates makes no difference as far as this goes. The point is the moon is sometimes going to be north and sometimes south of the sun, and that has nothing to do with it. That shows the two orbits. Yeah.
Now the 80 actually see both with the sun and the moon.
No, well they see the sun after it's setting or after it's setting when it's about to set. Yeah, because otherwise it rounds out the moon. But they know with the point where the sun sets.
The rotation of the sun is daily. What about the moon?
The sun has two. The sun. We're not talking about the sun's daily rotation. We're talking primarily about the sun's annual path.
Right.
The sun's annual path. So every day it appears in a slightly different position in the sky. It still takes 24 hours. Right. You know what, I don't want to spend too much time on this because we have a whole rest of the blot to go through, but the basic idea is that the way Rashi is putting it over here, see, is very difficult to understand, and a lot of greater people than me have had trouble understanding what Rashi means by that because it doesn't seem to fit with the known facts. So therefore, that's what I'm saying, you do have other explanations, some of which may be what Rashi meant to say. Such as Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation, again, that it doesn't depend so much on summer and winter, but rather when the sun is moving northward, which would be during the winter and the spring, versus when it's moving southward, which would be during the summer and the fall, which then, again, the moon is trailing behind it, so then the moon is going to be respectively north or south of the sun. Not north or south of the sun, rather, but it's going to set its position where it sets is going to be a little bit north or south of where the sun sets. We learn in a braise. Suppose that one aide says that the moon was too mardeus high. The word mardeus literally means a cattle prod. A cattle prod is a long stick with a metal tip that they would use. It's to prod an animal, to jab into the animals and to get it to move. People in those days, most people were farmers, so the average person, they would use a mardeus as like a rough and ready unit of measurement, like how high something is off the ground. Like nowadays, you might say it's X number of stories off the ground. So if one says two mardeus, and the other one says three, eidos and kayemis. Their eidos is acceptable. Two and three, that's a big difference. You could say, okay, one estimated two, one estimated three. It's not, yeah. But echad oimah gimel ve'echad oimah hei, suppose one says three and one says five, eidos and tailor, then their eidos is bottle, because that's already too big a difference. But either one of them can combine for a different aid, with a different aid, meaning the guy who did three and the guy who did five, Basin will send them both away. I'm sorry, we have to reject your aids because it doesn't match. But the guy who said three can go look around, can go call around, and base the object. Did anybody else estimate it to be three? Let's go in together and then try again.
In other words, you're saying the aids is possible, but not the aids.
Right, exactly.
supposed to come together?
No, they can split up the same way as we said at the end of the previous parak, for example, that a father and son can split up and become part of two different kiteidim. Tanarabon, we learn in a price. The reinu b'mayim, if the edim say we saw the moon reflected in the water, or reinu b'shoshes, for we saw it reflected in a b'shoshes. Rashi translates it with a French word, which means a lantern.
Yeah.
I mean, like we saw it reflected off a mirror.
What's Rashi's word?
Rashi's word is candela, which is probably related to the word candle. I don't know. Anyway, it means, according to Rashi, it means a lantern, which would be like a lantern has mirrored walls to disperse the light. There are other Rishonim. I think the Ritva says that Ashoshit also means that they're saying they saw it through a pane of glass, which we're going to say is possible, which actually gets into a big discussion that the Achronim have, whether when you see something through a pane of glass, whether it's a valid Eidus. You can have many cases. No, we're not even talking about like a magnifying glass, a plain pane of glass, like in a window. If you see, for example, somebody being Mechal Shabbos through a window, and you give him Asura and whatever, is that good enough? Or is that considered that you saw him? Or maybe not. Maybe you have to see him with your actual eyes. If you're wearing glasses, you know, these are questions in halacha.
That could be a reflection. I mean, for the moon, it could be.
Yeah, okay. So if they, anyway, so Reinu Bashoshes or Reinu Ba'avim, or they say we saw the moon through the clouds. In all those cases, Ein Me'idin Olav, they can't say Eidus on it. Similarly, if they say Chetzi Ba'mayim, we saw half the moon in the water, Chetzi Ba'avim, or half of it through the clouds, Chetzi Ba'ashoshes, or half of it reflected in a mirror or through a pane of glass, Ein Me'idin Olav, then also they can't say Eidus on it. What do you mean? Hashta kulei amet loy. You're saying that they can't say Eidus if they saw the whole moon reflected in the water. Chesim loy amet more so if they only saw half of it. Incidentally, Mepharshim point out the obvious fact. When we say half of it, we don't mean half the thickness of the crescent. I mean, the crescent is pretty thin at the beginning of the month, as it is. You can't really say that you saw half of that thickness. We mean half of it, as in you only saw half the top half or the bottom half, let's say.
Not half the crescent.
That one half of the, yes. So, Gemara says, Ela hachikama, what it means is like this. Suppose they say, Chetzi b'mayim, Chetzi b'rakia, we saw half the moon reflected in the water and the other half in the sky. Which, how is that possible? Well, Mepharshim say, for example, they have, let's say, they saw one half of the moon was covered by a cloud, so they saw one half of it reflected in the water, then they looked up and then the cloud had moved and now the other half is visible in the sky. Or they say, similarly, they say, Chetzi b'avim, Chetzi b'rakia, we saw half of it through a cloud and half of it clear in the sky, or Chetzi b'ashoshes, Chetzi b'rakia, half of it in a mirror or a pane of glass, and half of it in the sky. In all those cases, also in Medin, even though they didn't see half the moon, but because they didn't see the whole crescent, then they still can't be made on it. Turn it up. Bottom, we learn in a price. Suppose they say, Re'inuhu, we saw the moon, v'shuv loy re'inuhu, and then we didn't see it. In Medin, all of them, they can't say it on it. Re'inuhu, we saw the moon. V'shuv loy re'inuhu, and then we didn't see it again.
Okay.
So that's what we're gonna ask. Kol hachi chazul avazli. What, do they have to keep on going and seeing it? Once they saw it, that's good enough for Eidus. What, do they don't need to keep on seeing it? Yeah, man. I mean, eventually the moon is gonna set anyway. So who cares if it got covered by a cloud? I'm gonna buy a hachi kama. What the Braita means is like this: if they say re'inuhu me'eleinu, we saw it on our own, like we weren't meaning to look for it, we just accidentally happened to see it. Then we realize, hey, you know what, that's the moon. Let's take a closer look so that we can actually give Eidus. And then, they said, we saw it just casually. We happened to be outside. We happened to give a glance and see it. And then, we turned around to actually see it with our das. We meant now to look at it. And then we didn't see it. That's what we're saying, they can't say Eidus on it. My timer, Amor, because then you have to say, if they saw it, and then they looked again and they didn't see it, then you have to say it may not have been the moon at all. Kuvista de Iva Ba'almahu de Kazi. They may just have seen a sliver of a cloud that looked like the moon. And that's why they didn't see it again the next second. Which, Mepharshim point out, by the way, if, for example, they just saw it casually and, you know, they were able to grasp the information well enough with that, then they don't have to look for it again. If they didn't look for it again, then it doesn't matter whether it's visible or not. As long as there is reason for them to believe it was the moon. Only in this case, they themselves made it bad, basically, by trying to look again, and then all of a sudden it disappeared. That's when we have to say maybe it was a cloud. But if they hadn't bothered to look again, if they just came to Beis Din and said, you know, we weren't meaning to look for the moon, but we happened to glance it, then Beis Din could accept that.
Good.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. Mishnah says, so one thing...
They saw it so short while.
Can he tell them to answer best if he saw them like this?
So they might not be able to answer that easily. Maybe they'll need to end up using Ramgamliel's pictures, as we'll have at the end of the Almud. Mishnah says, Roish based in Omer Mekudosh, once they accepted the Edom, they accepted the Edus. So the head of the based in says Mekudosh, that the month is the Skadosh. V'chol ha'omayin and achar, Mekudosh, Mekudosh. And everybody else answers after him, Mekudosh, Mekudosh. Bein shenir b'zmanai, whether the moon was seen in its proper time, which is the night of the 30th, after the 29th, bein shaloy nir b'zmanai, whether the moon was not seen in its proper time, so it was seen a night later. So either way, whether it's a 29-day month or a 30-day month, Mekadoshinoy says still based has to declare that it's Mekudosh. So even if you have, it's a 30-day month, you know for a fact a month can never be longer than 30 days anyway, nevertheless, on the 31st basin, has to say Mekudosh.
Sure.
That's what the, yeah, what?
Sure, yes.
Not for sure. Well, we're going to talk about it in the Gemara. We're going to talk about it in the Gemara. There's actually four different opinions. Rabbi Lazar says no. If the moon was not visible in its regular time in Mekadoshinoy, so then Basin does not have to be Mekadoshin. Shekvav kitshuhu shamayim, because Hashem was already Mekadoshin. The very fact that the moon was not visible the night before, and that it had to be a 30-day month, means in other words it's automatically Mekadosh. In effect, the Basin Tomaila has already been Mekadoshin. The Basin down here does not have to.
Do we mean Bismanoy doesn't even give the day?
Exactly. Bismanoy and Shalom Bismanoy in this context of Kiddush HaChodesh, not 6 hours. It means Bismanoy means after 29 days, the night of the 30th, where then if the next day is declared a Chodesh, then it'll have been a 29-day month. And Shalom Bismanoy means that it was seen only the next night, where then it's a 30-day month. So that's what we said the other day, that they only, we said yesterday that they only do the torches if it was Bismanoy. And then they do the torches Matzei Rosh Chodesh.
So Bismanoy means from the 9th of the 29th to the 9th of the 30th.
Well, you can only see the new moon shortly before or after sunset, but yeah. So that way they know that. Well, first of all, that way they know when Yom Tov is. But second of all, that way they know the next day already is not a Chodesh. Yeah. So the Mishnah said Rosh based in Chula. Why does the Rosh based not say Chodesh? Etc. Rama Nani Mili. How do we know this? Amar Chia Bagamda. Amar Rabbi Yisrael Shol. Ben Shol. Amar Rebbe. Because Amar Kriva. The pasuk says Vaydaber Moshe Es Mayad Hashem. Moshe spoke the Yomim Tovim of Hashem. Mikan Shor Rosh based in Rami Chodesh. Moshe was the Rosh based in of his time, so he has to say Chodesh. He has to declare the Mayadim. Because by declaring Rosh Chodesh, he's declaring the Moedim. Also, Rosh Chodesh itself is called the Moedim.
From Eli Moedim Hashem.
Yeah. And B'chol Amon and Achar Mekudosh Mekudosh, and we say that the rest of the people answer after Mekudosh Mekudosh. Menolon, where do we know that they have to do that? Amon Apapa, Amon Kro, because the Pasuk also says, Asher Tikru Oysam. These are the Yom Tovim Hashem, Eli Moedim Hashem. Asher Tikru U Oysam, that you, plural, should call them out. Korebe Atem. And also the word oysam can be read, because it's written in the Torah without a vav, we can read it as if it said atem, which means asher tikru atem, that you, plural, you, the tzibur, should call them out. Rab Nachman Yitzchak says, I have a different pasuk. The pasuk says, Ela heim moyadoi, these are them my yom tovim, mean heim yom moyadoi. They, the people, have to declare that these are my yom tovim, these are my Rosh Chodesh. Mekodesh Trezi Mni Lomeli. Why do they have to say Mekodesh twice? Mikra A Kodesh. It says callings of holiness, plural. We see they have to call it out twice, as opposed to the Rosh Beis, they only have to say it once, because it only said by Dabba Moshe, it's Mayadeh Hashem. There's no plural over there. Well, there is Mayadeh, it's plural, but still, it doesn't.
Plural.
Yeah, but it means the Mayadim from throughout the year. It doesn't, you know. Mikra'i, you're thinking, the word kra'i means psukim, but that's an Aramaic. In Hebrew, the word mikra'i means callings of, you call out that it's holy. Mishnah said, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadokai, Mem, Lanir, Bizmane, and Mekadosh. So we had, so far we have two opinions. We have Tanakama saying you always do Mekadosh L'Chodesh, no matter how long it was. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadokai, who says you're only Mekadosh after a short month, when Rosh Chodesh is one day, it is on the 30th day. Incidentally, the fact that we have 2 days Rosh Chodesh nowadays is not really, when we're dealing over here, when they had Kiddush HaChodesh Al Pi Ariya, they really didn't have 2 days Rosh Chodesh. It was more like they had 2 days Rosh Chodesh in sort of in the same sense that we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. They had to keep the first day just in case Edom show up. If no Edom showed up, then retroactively it turns out that day wasn't Rosh Chodesh and the next day was. So we keep both days as Rosh Chodesh because it could have been Rosh Chodesh if it was a Chodesh Chaser, but yeah. Tanya, we learned a brighter. Plumo is the name of a Tanya. It's the other way around, exactly the opposite of Rav Elazar and Rav Tzadok. He says, Vizmano ein Mekachino. So if the month is being declared in its proper time, Rosh Chodesh is on the 30th, then you're not Mekadoshin. Shaloi Vizmano Mekachino. If it's Shaloi Vizmano, then you are Mekadoshin. Why? Because he holds like this. If it's Vizmano, meaning you saw the moon the night after the 29th, and you're declaring Rosh Chodesh the next day, that's it. You saw the moon. You don't need anything else. So you don't need to be Mechazik it. You don't need to strengthen it by saying Kodesh. Mashenkin, if you didn't see the month, the moon, the 29th, maybe you didn't even see it the 30th either, but you have to make a 30-day month, it can't be any longer than that, then he's saying you have to say that it's a Kodesh in order to be Mechazik, so everybody knows for a fact that it's a Kodesh. So he says the other way around, right? Dava Moshe is Moedei Hashem, that Moshe spoke the Moedim of Hashem, means when it's a Kodesh Molek. I mean, what would Rav Elazar of Tzadok do with the same thing? Rav Elazar of Shimon Omer, Ben Kach, and here we have a fourth opinion, Ben Kach or Ben Kach in Mekadoshinosa. Either way, we're not Mekadosh the Chodesh. According to him, the Rosh Beis Din never has to actually say Mekodosh. Shenemar, Mekidash Shemashnas HaChamishim, we had this back in the first Perek, the Pasuk says you should declare the 50th year holy, the Yovel year, which means Shonim Atta Mekadosh, the Atta Mekadosh Chodoshim, you only have to declare years holy. When it comes the year of Yovel, it's a mitzvah for Beis Din to say, this year is Mekodosh as a Yovel year. But there's no mitzvah of doing the same thing with Kedoshim. We have there's other things we use those Tzukim for. By the Vaidaba Moshe Smoedi Hashem, for example, we learn from that the mitzvah that she occurred in Kalachat Vecha Bezmano, that each yomtov you have to read something from the Torah that's appropriate to that yomtov. Elohim Mayadoi, we learn different things from these other Tzukim. Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Tzadok. The halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Tzadok, that only if it's a chodesh chaser, do you need to be mekadosh it, not a chodesh molek. Amr Abaye, achana nami tenena. In fact, we can see that from the Mishnah at the beginning of the third parak, which we'll have in a couple of days. The Mishnah says, Ra'uhu Beis Din v'chol Yisrael. Suppose that the Beis Din and the whole Jewish people saw the moon. It was very clear. And nechkuru Edim, and they even interrogated the Edim. They had a chance to ask the Edim all the questions. V'lo yispiku loyma mekudosh ad shechashecha. But they didn't have a chance to say mekudosh until it got dark. So it's already the end of the 30th day, and you can't be mekadosh lechodesh at night. I raise them over, then it becomes a 30-day month. Even though you would think, I mean, you saw the moon the last night. Everybody saw the moon last night. And you already went through the whole thing. All you were missing is saying the word mekudosh, but still, it has to become a 30-day month. Because you have to say Mekodesh. Because you have to say Mekodesh. But that implies Me'uber ein Mekodesh loy, which implies it only becomes a Chodesh Me'uber. It becomes a 30-day month. It does not have to be Neskadesh after all. The Beis Din does not have to get together on the 31st day to declare Mekodesh. That would be like Rav Elazar ben Tzadok. That only because it was the 30th day they had to say Mekodesh. If they missed their opportunity, they didn't get to say Mekodesh on the 30th, that's it. Nothing else needs to be done. Harei Zem Me'uber. It's automatically an Iber month. It's automatically a 30-day month, and that's it. So that proves that that's like Rav Elazar of Tzadok. So I think Mara says no. Loi, not necessarily. The Mishnah is not talking about whether you have to Mekadosh it on the 31st or not. The Mishnah just wants to point out that it is Me'uber. Because otherwise you might have thought, however, based in Vachol Yisrael, once the Beis Din and the whole Jewish people saw it, you would think it's already well known. Everybody knows the moon was seen the 29th. Automatically, everybody's already making plans that is, you know, it's Rosh Chodesh. That's the end of that. V'loy le'abrua, so they should not declare it an Ibru, but they should not declare it a 30-day month. Kamash Malon, that's the Chiddush that nevertheless you have to, because you have to say Mekodesh. The Mishnah is not addressing the issue. Does Beis Din have to get together on the 31st and say Mekodesh? Because that's not relevant to the point the Mishnah is trying to make. So it may well be that the halacha is like the Tanakama of our Mishnah. However, the Rambam Paskins like Rav Elazar ben Tzadok. So apparently the Rambam understands the Gemara as being doiched, but still, you know, it's still a good point. Yeah.
The Rambam is the only time that
they
came on time. Then
they have to Mekadosh it, but otherwise it's automatic, right? Yeah.
All the eight merits was
right. Mishnah says, Dmus Tzuris Levana, images of various forms of Levana, so various shapes and positions and whatever crescent of Levana, Hoyolol Rav Gamliel, the tabler, Rav Gamliel had drawn or painted or whatever on a board, over Koysel and on the wall, Baliyasa in his attic. Actually, in those days, an aliyah wasn't really an attic. Nowadays, you think of an attic as like a place where you store all your junk. In those days, an aliyah, an attic, was like one of the main rooms in your house. Like, you know, it was like basically it would be like you would say nowadays, like Rav Gamliel's study, his office, whatever. Yeah. the pictures of the moon there, Shabahen Maris Adyaitis, with those he would use to show simple people, and he would ask him, Hakazara Isai Kazet. Did you see it like this? Or did you, we're talking about simple, like that. We're talking about simple people. You have two people, simple people come to Basin. You start asking them how high was it off the ground? Was it to the north or south of the sun? What direction was it? I don't know. I don't know how to answer them. So you show them a picture. You know, did it look like this picture or did it look like that picture? Multiple choice question, basically. Which this Gemara now is going to get into a very interesting topic, which is the whole concept of drawing the sun and the moon. Now we usually, from little kids, from kindergarten on, we draw all the time pictures of the sun and moon and stars and never think there's an issue with it. But our Gemara over here is going to talk about it. It's not so simple. So you might ask, Mishari, is that allowed to have pictures of those to have pictures of the moon? But the pasuk says, "Loy satsun iti," you should not mate with me, and that means "Loy satsun kidmus shamashai." It means you should not mate like the images of my servants, which means the sun and the moon and the stars that are serving Hashem up in the sky. Amar Abaya, no, that's not what it means. Loy osra Torah ela shamashim she'efshal asas kamoisan. The Torah is only answering the kind of shamashim where you would be able to duplicate them. Nobody can make a new sun or a new moon. All you're making is a picture of it. Mashenkin, we're talking about the kinds of things which serve Hashem, which are used to serve Hashem, which it would be possible to make exact duplicates of. What do you mean? Can
you tell me?
Exactly
the picture of the moon the way it is.
No, but that's still not a moon itself.
Right.
The moon itself is a quarter of the volume of the earth. You're not going to be able to make a new moon.
Right.
Mashenkin, on the other hand, we're going to say, for example, a person is able to make a replica of Beis HaMikdash, a replica of Mizbeach, a replica of Menorah, whatever. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. To the Tanya, lo yasa adam bayis tabnes hechel. A person is not allowed to build a house in the same shape as the hechel. Mefarshim discussed, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. There's a whole simin. There's a few sifim in Shulchan Aruch and Yodea and Hilchos Avodah that discuss these issues. Whether it means that it can't be the same size, or is it also even if it's the same proportions but not the same size, etc. So a house the same shape or proportion or whatever as the Hechel, Achsadra Tabnes Ulam, or an Achsadra built the same way as the Ulam. The Ulam is the entrance way into the Hechel. It wasn't actually...
So what about the models that we just did?
So that's the thing. I was reading that there are some Achronim, in particular I saw the name of Rabbi Chaim Sonnenfeld mentioned in this connection, that he holds in fact that models are also. The consensus is that no. It's only if you're making it the same size and or at least even if not the same size, at least you're making it large enough to actually use a model. One of those little tiny models. You can't actually go into it. Right? That's another thing. That's the Islamic. We'll talk about that at the end. Yeah. Achsadra Tabnes Ulam. So the Ulam was the entryway to the Heichol. An Achsadra is actually a regular Achsadra, as we learned back in Sukkah, is typically has three walls around the sides of it, and the fourth side is completely open. The Ulam was somewhat like that also. The Ulam was actually the Ulam. We learned about it at the very beginning of Eruvin, right? The Ulam stuck out on both sides, the front of the Beis HaMikdash. It was kind of like, if here's the body of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Heichel, here's the Ulam. So it had these little wings sticking out on the side. But the main Ulam itself was this over here. So it's closed off on three sides. It has doors or windows or whatever, walls or whatever on three sides. And it's open in the front. It had a big door, a big wall in the front, and then a big doorway in the front. So
that was
the entrance into the Heichel, right? You'd walk up the steps, you'd walk through that, and you'd walk into the Heichel, yeah. So to make something, the kind of thing that could be made similar to that is an achsadra, and you're not allowed to do that. Chotzer keneged azara, you're not allowed to build a chotzer the same as the azara. Shulchan keneged shulchan, a shulchan the same as the shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash. Menorah keneged menorah, or menorah corresponding to the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Aval oiteh, shochamisha v'shoshisha v'shoshmoina. But you're allowed to make a menorah of five branches, or six, or eight. That's the common menorahs that we have. The Chanukias that we have for Hanukkah have eight, plus a shamash is nine. Actually, there's a famous question of the Beis Yosef, why we have Hanukkah for 8 days. If they found 1 day's worth of oil, then they already had enough for 1 day. What are we celebrating the next day? And there's dozens of different answers to that. There's a sefer that was published some years ago that collected like 100 different answers to that, and Ner Lameya it was called. One of the answers is, in fact, if they had made Hanukkah to be 7 days, people would make seven branched menorahs to light. And the Gemara is saying over here, you're not allowed to do that. So because of that, they made it 8 days. V'shoshiva lo yase, you have a seven-branch menorah you should not make, afilu shoshah minei matchas, even if you make it out of other kinds of metal. Because the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was made out of gold, but technically it didn't have to be. If you made a menorah out of, as we're going to talk about in a minute, silver or iron or copper or whatever, it would still be kosher. There's actually the halacha is that the menorah technically can be made out of any kind of metal, but according to the Chachamim, only metal. It cannot be made out of other materials. We're going to learn about a machlokes about that. But it doesn't have to be made out of gold. So if a person were to make a silver, let's say, seven-branch menorah, or an iron one, or a tin one, or whatever, it would still be similar to the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. But theoretically, it could be used there. Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda says you shouldn't even make a menorah out of wood of seven branches. Because that's like what the Hashemanoi kings did. They made a menorah at one point out of wood for the Beis HaMikdash. Which actually, the Gemara points out in Menachos that they're actually arguing about, they actually have the underlying argument between Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda and the Chachamim is, would the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash be kosher if it's made out of non-metal? According to the Chachamim, no. They learned by a klal of prat klal that it has to be something similar to gold. What's similar to gold? Other metals. Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda instead used a different principle called ribu yomir to riba, which says that it basically can be anything except for earthenware. Earthenware is like, you know, the one time you light it, it becomes filthy and disgusting. That's not allowed. But anything else would be allowed. According to him, you'd be allowed to make the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash or any other clay shoters out of bone, out of wood, out of stone, etc. Yeah. So he's saying over here, you can't make a menorah out of wood either. But yeah, and you see, he says, the Malchibe is Chashmanai made one out of wood. They said to him, "Misham Raya, you're bringing a proof from that. That wasn't wood. Shvudin shal barzel hayu. They had spits. They used poles made out of iron. V'chipum babats, and they plated them with tin. Meaning, this is after the Greeks said that the Greeks had stolen the menorah from the Beis HaMikdash. Actually, the Medrash has actually a fascinating story about that, which is worth taking a minute to tell the story. It's in Bereishis Rabbah. The Medrash tells that when the Yevonim first came into the Heichal, I mean they're nervous about the situation. You know, I mean you know they know after all that they know Hashem is powerful. And, you know, they knew their history. And, you know, any moment that one of them could be struck dead. And a few years before, that would happen. Actually, it says in the books of Chashmonaim, it tells a story of a fellow named Heliodorus who went in to try and steal the treasures of the Beis HaMikdash and was struck down by Malach. So they were pretty nervous. So they decided, you know what? Let's have a Yid go in first. Let's have one of the Misyavnim go in first. Also, I think Mepharshim on the Medrash say that way they meant to anger Hashem even more. Mela the Goyim, they don't know better. A Yid should know better, and he's still going in. It'll be that much more of a chutzpah to the Eibishter. So they found him at Siavim, named Yosef from Shissa, and they told him, go in first over there. Whatever you find over there, whatever thing you want to take out first, you can keep for yourself, and then we'll go and take everything else, and then bring it to the king's palace. He goes in. The first thing that catches his eye is the menorah. He carries it out. They're all looking at it. They're awed. I mean, you know, the menorah was a real work of art. They said, you know what? You know, I know we told you that you can keep that, but come on. I mean, this belongs in a king's palace, nowhere else. Go back in again, and we'll make the same deal with you. You take out something else. Come on. Don't overdo it, basically. He says, no, I won't go in again. They start trying to convince him. They offer him. They offer him treasures. They offer him this. Maybe even they offer him the menorah. Again, after all, I don't know. They offered him 3 years off of taxes, etc. Everything. He says no. Why not? I already angered Hashem once. I already made Hashem upset once by going into the Heichal and stealing something. Haytachin, I should do it again. Well, the Yevonim were pretty. They took out two saw horses. They laid him out on the saw horses and started sawing him in half. And as they were sawing him in half, he was crying and screaming, "Och and vey to me that I angered the Eibishter," and he died mitzvah tshuva.
Wow.
Yeah. The Medrash uses this as an illustration of the idea. Afilu rekonin shabach, even the most empty Jews have molly mitzvah tshuva. Yeah.
Did you read this story?
It's an Etzin Bereish Shabba.
Wow.
That's a different thing. That's also in that same Medrash, the story of Yosef ben Yezer's nephew Yaakov Shtura. So that's the story for another time.
Right, but they go and walk to nothing after them.
Apparently not. Yeah.
Has a
work on
that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Too bad. You go and walk to nothing after them. Anyway.
Right. Anyway, so the point is that the original golden menorah was gone, so the Chashmonaim, the Chachamim are saying, you're telling me they made it out of wood. No, they made one out of iron poles, because that's all they had, and they plated them with tin. At least plated with tin, it looks a little nicer. It doesn't look quite so ugly. Which some of Farshim say, that's how Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Huda made his mistake of thinking that it was made out of wood. Tin, after a while rusts, or not really rusts, or whatever, gets discolored, it becomes dark colored, and it starts looking from a distance like wood. It's still shiny, but it's brownish, so it looks like wood from a distance. Hashiru asom shok, as if when they became richer, they were able to make a new menorah out of silver. Chazru hashiru, and later on they became even richer, asom shok zav, and they made a menorah out of gold again like it's supposed to be.
Left out of one piece, that's a hard one.
Yeah. That's the thing. When it's made out of gold, the mitzvah is it has to be made out of one piece. You have to have the griyim, kaftorim, and prachim, all the decorations and everything. When it's made out of any other material, then nah. It doesn't need them. That's actually what Farshim said. That's why we call them shvudim shel barzel. Shvudim means like iron spit, like the kind used for roasting or something. Because they're like plain iron poles. They don't have to have the decorations when it's made out of iron or silver or what have you. The Rebbe has in a couple of places in Rishimus, the Rebbe discusses the deeper point of this that they made the menorah out of iron and plated it with tin. The gist of it is iron represents gvura, the kind of toughness that they needed to go on Mesiras Nefesh and then beat the Greeks. But even so, the iron still has to be plated with tin, which comes from Midas Chesed. He explains based on Sifrei Kabbalah that tin represents Chesed. Later on, when they didn't need that midah when things had calmed down, they didn't need that midah of barzel so much, then they were able to replace it with silver, and later on with gold, which represent higher levels of avat and ebishter, as we know from Tanya. So far we have then, Aloy Sasuniti has nothing to do with making pictures of the sun and the moon, it has to do with you're not allowed to make replicas of things from the Vizmikdash. The Gemara asks, "Shamosh and Sheyepshal Asos Kemos and Mishari." So you're telling me then that things that serve the Ebishter that are not that you can't make replicas of them, you can't make exact replicas of them, you are allowed. V'atanya, but we learn a brayso, another brayso on the same pasuk. Lo yisasu nisi means lo yisasu mos shamosh hamashamshin lefanei b'morim. Don't make the images of my shamosh who serve before me in heaven. The pashtus that means the sun and the moon. Amar Abaya, no, that's not what it means. What? These shamashim, we're not just talking about anything that serves Hashem in the heaven. We're talking about specifically the four faces, the kruvim, Yechezkel describes them in the Haftarah that we're going to read in a couple of days, Haftarah, the first day of Shavuot, and then in the Chayas HaKodesh, and in various places throughout Sefer Yechezkel, he describes the Chayas HaKodesh as being a malachim with four faces, one in each direction. Pnei Shor, Pnei Nesher, Pnei Aryeh, and Pnei Adam.
Four faces.
So those four faces connected, that's what we're talking about, you're not allowed to make. Yes. That would be Kedmus Shamashai, because they directly, the Kisei HaKavod, Tav Yachol, rest directly on the Chayas HaKodesh, and therefore that would really be Itti, that would really be what's with me in the, up there. I'm asked, well, if that's so, Elamat, the parts of Adam Bechodesh Tishrei. Well, based on that, then, it would sound like that an image of a human face should be allowed. Alamatanya, so why do we...
Separated,
yeah, from the other three. Alamatanya, so why do we learn in a bride? So, Kola Partsupras Mutarin, all kinds of facial images of Mutar. Actually, Mephoshim discussed whether Partsup means just a face or whether it means a whole body, but anyway, Chutzmi Partsup Adam, except for an image of a person. So we see a person by himself is also. If you're telling me only the Dalad Shamashim, one of which is Pnei Adam, fine, but then why is only an Adam by itself also also? Amar Rav Huna, Breder of Idi, Mipirkid Abaya Shmili. I heard the following in Abaya's Shir. That when the pasuk says loy sasun iti, besides that we said that iti means kidmus shamashai, I'm a sham shalafanai, that the images of my servants who serve in front of me, the word iti also has another meaning. It means loy sasun oisi, don't make me. Now, you can't make an image of Hashem. Hashem has no image, ein lo dmus hagof, etc. But what does the Torah describe? Nasa adam b'salmenu kidmusenu. Vayivrele kimus adam b'salmai. So a person, the form of a person is in a certain way a reflection of the kavyachol of the form of the Eibishter. We have all over in Siddus. We talk about Adam Kadma, and that relates to this whole idea. So therefore, so far we have two dinim. Then you're not. So we're actually three so far. We can't make replicas of the kelim of the Bismikdash. From one meaning of loy sasaniti. Number two, you can't make a thing, or you can't make an image of the Chayas HaKadosh, and number three, you can't make an image of a person separately.
How do you know what the Chayas HaKadosh look like?
From your Chazal description.
Well, you can't make a picture of a shore or a whatever.
Well, that's what we're saying. A shore by itself would be allowed so far, according to this. Only if you're making a shore plus a nesher plus an aria plus a person, that you cannot. Yeah.
Altogether. No, right.
Yeah. And Mepharshim also discussed, I mean, there's, you know, Yechezkel also mentions in his description other details about the Chayas HaKodesh. He mentions that they have six wings, he mentions that they have feet shaped like the foot of a cat, a split hoof, et cetera. So Pashas, it would mean that you'd have to have all those details for it to be altered.
But we're forbidding even the face, to make it face.
That's what I'm saying. When we say parasuch, it's a question whether it means faces or whether it means the whole body. I mean, here Rashi says leguf echad that it means on one body. So Mashas Rashi understands that it means the faces plus the body.
Yechezkel describes the group of these chayes.
Briefly, he describes them. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously it all means things v'ruchnius. It's not like, you know, there aren't little creatures up in Shemayim supporting Hashem's throne that have six wings, etc. You know, it's all ruchnius in yanim. But this is how the Ebeshet chose for the Navi to be able to see it. Like, you want to ask still, Shah Shamash and Mishori? So you're telling me the other servants of Hashem, Lamaila, like the sun and the moon, are allowed? You're allowed to make pictures of them? Well, Tanya, Loy Sasun Iti, Loy Sasun Kinmus Shamash and Amasham Shanapon Abamorim, and this one actually spells it out. What do we mean, Shamash and Amasham Shanapon Abamorim? We're going to Efanim, Ustrafim, Vachayat HaKodesh, Amalach HaShoret. For example, the Efanim, which again, in Yechezkel's description over there, he describes that the Chayat HaKodesh are on top of a lower level of Malach called Efanim, which look like wheels. The same. There's an odd thing about 50 years ago. There was a fellow named Eric von Daniken who came up with a notion that a lot of things in the world are the work of aliens. He claimed that the pyramids in Egypt are the work of aliens. The pyramids in Central America, a bunch of other things all over the world. And he claimed also that this nevuah of Yechezkel is a vision of aliens. So the Chayas HaKodesh are aliens, you know, with four faces and everything. And the Efanim are their spaceships.
Yeah.
Anyway. So they found him, or Surafim, and the Surafim, the Chayas HaKodesh, and Malach HaSharet. So we see it's more than just the Chayas HaKodesh. There's other kinds of Malachim that are included as well. Amar Abaya, still, Loi Aser Torah El Shamashim Shabmadur Elyon. The Torah is still only answering the kind of the servants of Hashem who are in the upper chambers, like in the higher parts, you know, in the ruchniistic parts of the heavens, so to speak. Not the sun and the moon, which are in the heavens closer to us. So you're telling me that you're allowed to make pictures or images or whatever of the servants of Hashem that are in the lower heavens, which again, that's what brought us into here, because Rav Gamliel and his pictures of the moon. But we're learning yet another braisa. When the pasuk says in the Aseret HaDibros, the pasuk says, "Lo yitzchach lechapes v'chotzmona, asher b'shamayim mimal, that's in the heavens above, v'asher ba'aretz mitachas, and that's in the earth below, v'asher b'mayim mitachas ba'aretz, and that's in heavens under, that's water under the earth." Now, of course, the shamayim are mimal, and of course, the aretz mitachas. So we're going to learn something from each of these phrases. Asher b'shamayim means l'davis chamal levanek chavam amazalos, comes to include the sun and the moon and the stars and the planets. Mimal l'davis malach hasharet, and the word mimal comes to include also the malach hasharet. So here we have, for the first time, a braisa that clearly says you can't make pictures of the sun and the moon.
What's the form of Malach HaSharet? How do we know what they look like?
Based on the descriptions of the Nevi'im. Again, we have Yechezkel's description. We have descriptions given by Yeshaya. There's a couple of places in Tanakh where Malachim are described. The answer is Kitanya Hila Avdam. That Bryce is talking about you're not allowed to make any of these images in order to worship them. Rabbi Gamliel wasn't making them to worship them. Well, if you're talking about to worship, then why are you only mentioning things in the heavens? And you can't make even an image of a tiny worm in order to worship it either. It's not that there's an issue against worshiping it. There's a separate issue against making an image which is going to be used for worship, even if you yourself don't worship it. In Hilchos Avodah Zarah, the Rambam lists a bunch of different issurim in this connection. You can't worship an image. You can't make one that's going to be worshipped. You can't have somebody else make you an image and you worship it. You can't, et cetera, et cetera. So why Epistapka are we mentioning the sun and the moon and the malachim and whatnot? Yeah. The answer is Einochanami. Yes, that's true. Indeed, indeed you can't make if you're gonna be making something to worship it, you can't even make a small worm. The Tanya, as the Braita continues, Asher Ba'ores, that you're not allowed to make anything in the ground. L'rabes Horem Ugvois, Yamam and Horus. This includes making images of mountains or hills or oceans or rivers. Or Afikim v'Geoyes, or or springs of water, or valleys, all those kinds of things, if you're going to worship them. Now, obviously, you're allowed to make a picture of a mountain, for example, but not if you're going to be worshiping it. Mitachas l'rabbis shol shokotan. And when the pasuk says Hashem ba'aretz, the word mitachas underneath l'rabbis shol shokotan, which means you're not even allowed to make a picture of a tiny worm, of an earthworm. So yes, indeed, if you're going to make it to worship, you can't make any. So far, the Gemara says that's what the Braisa means. You're not allowed to make a picture of the sun and the moon if you're going to worship it. Rabbi Gamliel is not making them to worship it. No problem. That's that. Yeah. But the Gemara is still not satisfied. Rav Tanya, loy sasin, you're not allowed to make anything with me, which means loy sasin could mushamashi amashamash in the funai, could go in chamulavana kechavim mazalis. You're not allowed to make images of anything that serves me, such as the sun and the moon and the kechavim mazalis. So here we have clearly Mela, the previous one, fine, you could say since it was talking also about hills and valleys and whatnot, that it means la'avdam. Here we clearly see from this last braisa that there's a separate iser on the things that are up in Shemayim that serve Hashem, the sun and the moon and the stars. So now we finally reached the point of our question. So how is Rav Gamliel have pictures of the moon to show people? The answer is China. Rav Gamliel da'achirim also. It's different in Rav Gamliel's case. Other people, Goyim, made it for him. He didn't make it himself. He has the pictures on his wall, but he didn't make them himself.
So in other words, you cannot have them if you make them.
Wait, we're not done yet.
We're getting there.
We're getting there, but wait. What about, for example, the case of Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda had a ring, a signet ring, which Goyim had made for him. This signet ring had some kind of image on it, whether different Mepharshim discuss whether it was a picture of a person or whether it was a picture of some other image that you're not allowed to make, such as a darko and a kind of dragon that they used to worship in those days or whatever. And Shmuel says to Rabbi Yehuda, Shinina, sharp one, that was Rabbi Yehuda's pet nickname for Rabbi Yehuda, May Ene the Dane, knock out the eye of this image, which means some of Parshim say it means exactly that, knock out one eye. And Rashi says though it doesn't mean literally knock out the eye. Klima hashchei tzuras, it means destroy the form of it. It shouldn't look so much like a person anymore. Like for example, you knock off its nose or something. So the Gemara is assuming right now that the same dinim that apply that we said before, you're not allowed to have an image of a person, also apply, for example, to images of the sun and the moon. So it doesn't matter if Goyim made it. So how is Rav Gamliel allowed to have it in his house? The answer is Hosam Chos Meboila Tava. In that case, of Rabbi Yehuda, the signet stuck out. Now, well, in other words, you have two kinds. Think of like you have a stamp. You can have a stamp where the letters stick out, and when you press it into wax or clay or what have you, then you have an impressed image, an incused image. Or you can have the other way around. It's recessed on the ring, and when you press it into the clay or whatever, then you get an image in relief. Well, that's the thing. In Rabbi Yehuda's case, either one would be also. But wait, in Rabbi Yehuda's case, the ring, the signet itself was sticking out. If you press it into clay, you'll have something that goes in. Right. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Tabas Chosma Boilet, if you have a ring where the signet sticks out, and the signet is a figure of a person or whatever, one of these things, also Lahanicha, you're not allowed to wear it.
So how did you
set where the Tabara? That it had an image on it. It may have been a flat image. No, okay, a signet has to stick out, but okay, who says it was a picture of a person?
The image of
Tabara. I don't know about that. Maybe not, I don't know. You're not allowed to wear it, but you're allowed to feel with it, because when you feel with it, you get an inverse image, and that's allowed. If the signet is concave, a female, you're allowed to wear it, but also lachtim, but you're not allowed to stamp with it, because then you'll end up with a protruding image. Yeah. The reason why you're not allowed to wear I skipped the word, Mishum Chashta. The reason why Shmuel is telling Rabbi Yehuda not to wear this ring, why you have to damage the figure, is Mishum Chashta, because of suspicion. People might think, Rashi says, that it's his Avodah Zarah, that he actually is worshipping it as Avodah Zarah, and therefore he shouldn't wear it. Other Mepharshim say that the Mishum Chashta means that the people might be choshed that you made it. We're saying that if a goy makes it, then it might be theoretically allowed. But Shmuel is worried about that people are going to think Rabbi Yehuda himself made it. So by the same token, with Rabbi Gamliel's pictures on the face of it, it should be the same thing. Maybe he wouldn't do that. But one second.
Wait,
we haven't gotten to Adam Chashev yet. Wait.
Well,
First, the Gemara asked, are you telling me that we're worried about people being choshed? But we have the case of the Shof V'Yosef Shul in Nahadah. What does Shof V'Yosef mean? Rashi has two explanations. One is that was the name of the neighborhood it was in. The other is that Shof means that it was destroyed, moved, V'Yosef, and it settled. When the Yidden were taken into Golos 11 years before the first Torben, the Golos Yechaniya, they brought along with them some of the stones of Yerushalayim. Like, so that they should never forget. And they used those stones to build the shul in Nahaja. This shul lasted for hundreds of years. It was still around in the times of Amoraim. The Gemara mentions in Chagigah, and not Chagigah, in Megillah, I think, that this is one of the places in Bava where the Shechina was known to be. Yeah. But in this shul, there was an image of the king there, that the king had ordered them to put an image of his in the shul. Rav and Shmuel and the father of Shmuel and Levi, all great Tamar Chachamim, went in there, and they daven there, and there's no problem with Chashad. Nobody was going to suspect that they're bowing down to the king's statue. So we see there's no issue of Chashad. Why is there an issue of Chashad with Rabbi Yehuda signifying? The answer is Rabim Shiny. It's different when you have a Rabim. You're not worried. You don't have to worry that that people are going to be choshed that Rabim are bowing down to a getchka.
You can actually daven when it's a statue in shul.
Apparently, yes. I mean, do we mean that the statue was actually sitting there on the Mizrach wall? Not necessarily.
No.
But you go into some shuls nowadays. They'll have artwork or whatever in the foyer. Maybe it was like that. I don't know. The question is, Rav Gamliel Yochid, who? But Rav Gamliel is a Yochid, so we're back to the same problem. The answer is, given the Nasi who Shifti Rav Gamliel, not an Adam Choshev, but since he's a Nasi, then there are always many people around his house, so therefore there's no problem of Chashad.
Anyone short of a Nasi would be a Chashad.
Well, anybody who doesn't have people around his house. Now, Tosfos asks the obvious question. In Rav Gamliel's case, why do we have to assume Bechal that there's a problem? We're saying over here the whole problem with Rabbi Yehuda's signet ring and with the statue in the Shof V'Yosef Shul is the statue is three-dimensional. Rabbi Yehuda's signet ring is also three-dimensional. It's in relief. The pictures of the moon, Lav Davshar, are three-dimensional. They're painted. I know they're painted on a board. What's the problem? There's another minion at 9:40. 9:30. There's another one at 9:40.
Oh.
Thank you. Rav Gamliel's pictures of Pashtus are just painted on a board. What's the problem? The answer is Tosfos mentions a very interesting idea. The pictures of the Malachim, pictures of people, pictures of these various things that we talked about are also only when they're 3D, because that's how you see it. You see another person as 3D. You see a Malach. When a Navi sees a Malach in his Nevoah, he also sees it 3D. When you see the sun or the moon in the sky, yes, they're three-dimensional, but they look in the sky two-dimensional. They look flat. So therefore, because they're far away. So therefore, yes, even a flat image of them would be awesome.
Because what?
Because you're making an image of something that serves Hashem in the sky in the way that people normally see it. In the pale way that people, which is 2D.
2D, although it's 3D.
Iba is saying, and the Gemara says, here's another possibility to get out of the problem. One possibility we said again is because there's always Rabim in Rav Gamliel's house, so therefore there's no chashad. Possibility number two, deprakim hava. These were made out of pieces. They were like jigsaw puzzles. It's only also if it's one piece, like they're like the actual moon in the sky. The Ibar is saying, well, the Islamid avad. Or possibility number three, he made these pictures in order to teach people. Like in this case, he's using them to interrogate the Edim. But even in general, he probably used these pictures to teach a Talmidim what are the possible ways that the moon can look like in the sky, depending on the season and whatever. Uchtim, and the Pasuk says, lois sil mad lasis, you're not allowed to learn how to do like the Goyim do. I've allowed to lamed lahavin lahoris, but you're allowed to learn in order to understand it or in order to teach. Like, for example, the same way as the Sanhedrin, for example, had to know all the details of how to worship Avodah Zarah and how to do Kishuf and whatever, so that they could cross-examine witnesses and punish people who are doing these things. The same way, you're allowed to make these pictures in order to learn. What's the bottom line halacha? So first of all, the Rambam mentions an interesting idea. The Rambam says, when we're talking about not making pictures of the sun and moon, the Rambam says, we're not talking about making a circle and saying this is the sun and this is the moon. That wouldn't be an issue. The Rambam says, when we say you're not allowed to make a picture of the sun and the moon, it means in those days they had these mythological images that were meant to represent the sun and the moon and the various planets. Like for the sun, it was like a king riding in a chariot wearing a crown. For Venus, it was a beautiful lady. For Saturn, it was an old man, etc. That's the kind of thing we're talking about.
But some to make a circle
is not an issue, according to the Rambam.
There was no history in your drawing.
Now, wait. However, in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramad does bring the Rambam's opinion, but the Shach says there's a difference. The difference is based on our Gemara over here. There's a difference whether you have an image that somebody else made and you found it, where there's a question, do you have to worry about is it a Avodah Zarah image or not? Do you have to destroy it? That's one case. Versus making one yourself. So when it comes to, for example, if you find something with a picture of a sun drawn on it, you don't have to worry. The guy who drew it may have drawn it in order to worship it. So therefore, you're allowed to keep that image. You're allowed to keep that picture. But if you yourself go and draw a picture of the sun, and even what it's talking about, you draw a circle and like points around it to represent the sun, that would be a problem. Again, even though it's 2D, because like if it's a teach, that's different.
Well, if it's a teach, that's different.
But for example, when your little kids in kindergarten are drawing a picture with the sun and the moon and whatever, it might not be an issue. I've known people who are careful for that reason. They'll draw like a quarter of the sun. They'll draw like the sun in the corner of the picture or something, so they're not drawing the whole thing. The Chassam Sofer has an interesting tshuva where in his time there was a shul where somebody had like stained glass windows or something in the shul. They had one of these stained glass windows had a picture of the sun, and it said next day, I think, Kishemesh Morgan Hashem Alekim or something like that. And the Chassam Sofer said there's two problems with that. Number one, having a picture of the sun, and even worse, you're putting it in a shul and you're putting next day the name of Hashem as if like, what are you saying, Hashem is the sun, Chas V'Shalom, take it down. But we see from this Gemara that actually drawing pictures of the sun and the moon is not a simple thing at all. And one more thing, just to point out also, we see from this Gemara, I mean, obviously these images of the moon that Rabbi Gamliel is using, obviously are just images of crescents. They're not images of a whole moon, because you're not asking the witnesses to say they saw the full moon. But obviously we see from that that even a crescent is a problem also, even though it's not a complete circle of the moon. The pictures of rabbis, so now we were saying before that the pictures of people are also, again, according to Tosfos, it would come out, pictures of people are only also if they're 3D. It would come out, according to Tosfos, that if they're flat, if they're two-dimensional, or a painting or whatever, or a photo, then it would be mutter. Having said that, there have been rabbonim over the years who were picky about this and didn't want to have their pictures taken or drawn or what have you.
Holograms, they look 3D,
but they are 2D on the medium that they're made on.
When you look under a certain angle,
it may look 3D, but it is actually, in fact, it is 2D. You know.
Now they have new cameras that take 3D pictures.
Sure, I mean that's the 3D movies they have nowadays. Yeah, so yeah, but still, the actual image on the film itself is 2D, so it may be less of an issue. I don't know. So that's one answer, is that the Islamid is okay. So in Rabbi Gamliel's case, it would be the Islamid. Yeah, by the same token, for example, one of the Acharon Apostkim says that, for example, when you're teaching kids Parshas Vayeshev and you want to give them a picture of what Yosef saw in his dream, the sun and moon and the stars, that would be allowed. That sort of thing, for example. There is also an interesting historical detail in this connection. A couple hundred years ago, the Rav of Amsterdam was named Rav Elazar Rekeach. He's the ancestor of the famous Rekeach family, the Rebbe's Belz. The first Belz Rebbe was like his grandson or great grandson or something. He was apparently very popular and very well respected by the Goyim as well. At one point, they minted a coin or a medal or something with his picture on it. He didn't like the idea. So most of those, so he got them to recall most of those. That metal still exists nowadays, but it's pretty rare because of that, because most of them at his request were destroyed. Yeah.
The first was the